RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to this week's edition of the Landry Football Podcast. It is Thursday, July 23rd here. Always good to catch up with you talking football. I want to remind you of a couple of things off the top over at LandryFootball.com is we're getting ready for the season, and we'll get into that. Where are we in terms of the season? We'll get into some of that, the start of it, what have you. We're getting ready for the season with the full breakdowns. We've got all of our college breakdowns in the Power Five and certainly working on our breakdowns in the Group of Five, and then we'll get into the NFL. So we've got a lot going on. Check out LandryFootball.com today. The latest inside information around the college game and the pro game. Absolutely the best way to follow the game. We think you're going to absolutely love it. So appreciate your support there. Appreciate everything that you do for us over at Landry Football and listening to this podcast at LandryFootball.com. So appreciate you joining us, and we've got a lot of things that we want to get to in today's show, including kind of an update on things. We've got a few questions following up on some of the X's and O's conversations that I had last week. And I've been asked a really good question, kind of a broad-ended question, so I'll make this a complete segment. Kind of where things stack up. We hear this, DBU. Who's DBU? Is it LSU? Is it, you know, Florida? And this, we're going to tell you how many players each school has produced since 2010 and since 2000 at each position. So we've got a lot to get to today. So let's get right to it, shall we? So where are things right now? We know that rookies are, as we speak, reporting and talking to people in the league. There's a really good plan of attack inside each NFL facility with regards to safety, disinfecting, making sure that things are the way they need to be in order to preserve the safety element of players as they go into the facilities. We're going to see how this plays out and if there's any problems and any adjustments that need to be made based upon how things play out with rookies. I am very curious to see if there's any negative feedback, any problems, and they'll adjust to it by the time the rookies come in. Early next week, the 28th, you'll start to see the veterans go in. I am of the belief right now that based upon how they're doing it, that the biggest obstacle they're going to have is players contracting the virus outside the facility and bringing it into the facility. That's their biggest concern. It always has been. This is not news, but that seems to be the biggest issue. I think with the fact that inside they're going to be so stringent and so important, but when guys go home, is the wife or the kids bringing it home from daycare? I know it's summertime right now, but maybe it's daycare or summer school or camps. I don't know if any of that's going on right now. Probably you've got a halt on a lot of camps and things. But as we get back into school, some are going to have virtual schools. Some are going to have schools as normal. And are they going to pick it up at home and bring it in? And then how you deal with it? And who's been exposed to them? It's the cold contact tracing thing. So that's the biggest thing that people are concerned of. The other thing that I think needs to be looked at is from a coaching standpoint, how do you deal with not a possibility, but a high probability that you're going to be dealing with a coach that's going to get it? When you look at the age of certain guys more vulnerable, again, you're going to be wearing masks, but is that secure enough? Or are you going to be able to practice proper social distancing? Not sure. That's going to be pivotal. You better be prepared as a coaching staff to have multiple coaches ready to handle play calling duties offensively or defensively. And this is on the college and pro level. Because if a guy tests positive during the week and he's the play caller, he's the coordinator, you got to redirect it. People think, oh, let's just let somebody else do it. Well, it's not just somebody else can just up and do it. That person has to be consumed with a game plan to the point where he can call it just as good. And if there's any drop off, it could have a significant impact. So I think managing that's important. Now, in college, we have a lot of these analysts, and the NCAA is now a lot making allowances for coaches that are analysts, off the field analysts, to be able to step into on the field roles if somebody contracts the virus. Linebacker coach goes out, analyst comes in. So again, the roles have to be paired up in that the linebacker coach may be responsible for handling the personnel groupings going on to the field. So you get the personnel grouping calls, we're a nickel, and you get all the guys together and send them up. Well, somebody else has to be able to step into that role seamlessly or else we're going to be in trouble. In the NFL, it's the same thing. Less staff members, but you better be prepared for that. There's no doubt. Those are real things that are concerning to me. How do you deal with it? Certainly the players, we focus on that, and rightly so, but there's also some coaching elements that could be lost, and that could certainly hinder your ability to perform as effectively as you need to in this environment. There is no magic news about timing or what have you. I have heard that from an NFL standpoint, all systems go. I don't know that all systems will continue to go as we work through this process, but all systems are a go, and they will plan and adjust accordingly with the idea that they're playing. Until somebody high up forces them off the field, the owners are committed to playing this season. The players, while many have come out and talked about concerns with safety, they still want to play. They want to get the best environment so that they can play, so that they can collect their money. You're going to hear quite a bit about certain negotiations with the NFL and NFLPA about how they're going to do this, how they're going to handle the deferring of money and the furloughs, a lot of different things that they're going to look at. It's not going to stop football. The negotiation is not going to stop football in the NFL because there's just too much money at stake. How we do it and how it comes out, I mean, this is all negotiation, right? This is how we negotiate today. It's through social media, through the media in general, but they're going to play. No ands, ifs, or buts about it. It from that standpoint. Now, certainly we could see governmental, from a state, local, or national viewpoint, shut things down. That's always possible. And I can't forecast. We can't forecast that. From the college end, it's a little bit more complex. We've talked about that several times here and on different platforms on LandryFootball.com about college has a bigger hill to climb. You got college campuses. You got younger kids. You got more of them. They're not likely to practice the social distancing, a little bit more social environment. I mean, you got a lot of issues. Some of it that is similar from a college and pro standpoint, but some of it's, I think, a bigger challenge. You're right there on a campus with a lot of folks. Who's going to have their campuses open? Clemson has announced the first 4 weeks, students are not going to be on campus. It's virtual teaching. So you got the university aspect, which is certainly what they're there for, but then the football side that is maybe going to have to do something in addition to that to secure safety. Then how do you deal with it? And how do you, you know, a lot of this discussion about, well, it's young guys and they can deal with it and whatnot. Well, yeah, I think that the studies show that the younger you are, the less vulnerable you are to this disease. However, what is important to understand is that if you test positive, and you're in a situation where you're going to have to sit out, it's going to affect your availability from game to game, team to team. Situations will vary. But nonetheless, be something that you're going to have to focus on and deal with. It's going to look, be chaotic in a lot of ways. It's going to look, feel, and sound different this year. Anybody's looking for a normal football season, you're going to be disappointed. That will not exist. I think everyone understands that. Can we just have football? That's what people want to know. Fans, I'm going under the assumption that probably we won't have fans, and if you can, that's a bonus. That's great, but I wouldn't count on it. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't risk it, but that's just me. There's certainly a lot of finances involved. It is extremely important that college programs get some fans in to recoup some of the losses, which are going to be significant to begin with. The NFL, same thing. The NFL has a $75 million expenditure now added, an unforeseen expenditure. And I say unforeseen if you go back like a year ago. Certainly we saw this in March and April that this is what's going to be necessary. $75 million in testing the NFL is going to spend. College football, going to be a large expense there as well on testing. In an environment where you're going to lose a large chunk of your ability to make money, and now you throw on top of it a large expense. Not a pretty situation. The economics of both sports, both college and the NFL, are going to take a hit. Now, the NFL is in much better position to take that hit. College football, not so much. College football's funded a lot to do with attendance, which is going to be nothing or limited. And certainly you look at the private money that comes in to help facilitate certain things within a university, the sugar daddies, as we are apt to call them. Well, their what are their financial portfolio looking like? Or are they willing to write checks? Had a discussion recently and have discussed this for a while. Is this going to be a year that's going to help coaches? Will coaches get a coronavirus pass this year? Meaning, not the type of year that you want to be firing a coach, which means hiring a coach. You don't know what your funds look like. You can dismiss the bad season as an unusual year. Even though everybody's going to have to deal with it, it can be looked at as, well, it's not normal, and we need to look at it as, let's give it another year and see. But even if you feel like, oh, boy, this is not working, we need to move on, are you going to be able to afford to do it? Owners will be able to afford to do it in the NFL if they really want to. But if they're looking at the budget, not the year that you want to be paying off coaches. Certainly in college, going to be difficult. Going to want to go and try to raise money to buy out a coach's contract this year? A lot tougher to do. And then on top of that, buy out the staff, whatever is remaining there, and go out and hire a new staff. Lots of money in a time where you're not bringing in any in or very little in. So there are a lot of things that are going to be affected throughout this process as we move closer to it. Some news that I want to get to off the field in the NFL. The rookie signings are pretty much wrapping up. All the draft picks. You know, people thinking, why does it take so long? Well, deadlines create movement. You always know that I preach that. So as rookies are reporting, they're getting signed. Up on LandryFootball.com, I've got in my notebook section as they're signing each and every day, and a little bit of a reminder of how the player fits in to the team or not. There is some news off the field that obviously has been very negative regarding Washington and Dan Snyder, and certainly in New York with the Jets with Woody Johnson. Woody first. You know, I don't know the validity of the comments, and you can read about what he said and racially insensitive comments, bigoted comments, supposedly, allegedly, and certainly defamatory to women. We'll see the level of provability of those statements and how that might, and people have asked me, well, what does that mean for them? Don't know. I mean, I think we're living in a time that if some of these things are proven, it'll be interesting. Now, people say, oh, they'll take away the team from them. That has to be voted on by the league owners. And I wouldn't be so sure that they'd have enough votes, a three-quarter majority, to vote them up. But we'll see. And I'm not advocating it. I don't know the level of authenticity on these comments or not. Time will tell, again. Leads me to the recent situations in Washington with Dan Snyder. You know, the whole name change of the Redskins. They will never change the name of this football team. Put it in bold quotes, so said Dan Snyder. Many times. Well, they've done just that. They've taken the Redskins name off, and they're soon, I think, are going to rename the team. And as they do that, you know, we're going to see where they go with the name and how that plays out. But on top of that, word comes out, an expose in the Washington Post about how women were treated, how employees in the organization were treated. And so now it becomes, okay, this was a culture created by Dan Snyder. It does not, certainly some of the information in the details are very disturbing. But yet, considering the dysfunction in the organization with Dan Snyder, I'm not surprised that things got haywire on that side as they've gotten haywire on the football side. So it's surprising to the degree of what happened, but it's not surprising who's responsible for it. I don't know how much Dan Snyder knew, or was he just purposely plausible deniability, purposely not being aware. But this is another one we need to watch. And I would definitely say that if it is proven that he was complicit, or certainly if it's proven that he was responsible for some of these things, it could be very, from a black eye standpoint, it could be devastating to him. Again, would have to be voted on by his fellow owners to take the team away from him. I don't know if we're there yet. He's not the only owner. He's the majority owner. I think, like anything, money talks. And in both situations, like, why are they changing the name of the Redskins? Public pressure, finance. I mean, you can have public pressure. They'll deal with public pressure. They'll wait to the next, you know, bad news cycle come along with somebody else to take them off the front page. They'll wait that out. You start taking away financial resources. You have minority owners wanting to back out. You have major donors say, we are pulling our sponsorship, lots and lots of money because of this name, or we don't want that, whatever the case may be. Then all of a sudden you see action. I think that we'd be foolish to totally rule out anything based upon public reaction to it and what that might bring about. So owners will have to decide it. But what they decide, they're going to side with their fellow owner. Unless it is a financial mess for them, in which case they're going to throw their fellow owner under the bus to save their own financial hide. That's how things work in this league. It always has, and it always will. If there's one thing that's different in today's world, people ask me, well, you know, back in the day, 30, 40 years ago, didn't have social media, didn't have the internet. You know, people could be aghast. There could be an uproar from fans, and you wouldn't know about it. What are you going to get? A letter to the editor of a newspaper that, you know, they may print one out of a 10,000 that's sent in. You don't have a voice. Fans don't have a voice. Now they do. Now it becomes a groundswell. It is a sometimes vicious social media cycle that goes on to the mainstream media, and that brings a lot of pressure, and advertisers say, wait a minute, if they're going to boycott us because we're associated with them, we're demanding that you do this, or we're going to pull our advertising. Those things create movements, and with that has substantive changes. So I do think, while I'm just pointing out procedures for these situations, I do think that those procedures can go in one direction or the other depending upon where the financial issues arise. Follow the money, right? Oh, yeah, follow the money. That has always been, still will be the case. Want to get to a couple of topics that people have questioned, and we appreciate the positive responses on answering some of the questions. I think we had a couple on the RPOs and screens and pre-snap motions. If you got a question that you want me to address here on this podcast, send it to me at LandryFootball.com. Go to LandryFootball.com, hit contact Chris, and we'll address it. A couple of things that was brought to my attention or was asked of me that I will address here. One is a question about what is the difference between zone coverage and pattern match. I've heard you discuss it, heard other people discuss it. What's the difference? Classic zone coverage is when defenders are responsible for areas of the field. They'll drop into those areas while keeping their eyes on the quarterback and reacting to the ball. Playing an area, dropping to a field, part of the field, but keeping your eyes on the quarterback is the key. That's the key of what they're doing. So pattern match is an umbrella term that could refer to a zone match and a man match. So in a zone match coverage, defenders drop to an area but are eyeing receivers and reacting accordingly. So there are drops in movement change based on route distribution. So, again, classic zone, looking at the quarterback dropping to an area. Pattern match within a zone is dropping into your area, covering a zone, but instead of eyes on the quarterback, your eyes are on the receiver and reacting accordingly to match patterns based on the route distribution. So, in man match coverage, which is different than zone match. So man match, defenders are reading receivers and will eventually lock on man-to-man with receivers according to their reads after the route distribution. So the Vikings do that probably the best in the NFL, Mike Zimmer, and Saban in college. Pattern match is best. Another question I had, what is a true double team? Because you often hear announcers say quarterbacks are throwing into double coverage or even triple coverage, and you might be watching it at the game in person or on TV and say, oh, yeah, correct, because the camera catches up, particularly on TV. Cameras will catch up, and you say, oh, yeah, look, you threw it right into coverage. Defenders, multiple defenders around the ball, threw it into coverage. Most of the time, that's inaccurate. If you watch closely, most of the time, it's just the secondary converging onto the throw. Once the ball is released and they see it, you're reacting in a position towards the throw to be in a position to help potentially on the tackle. A true double team is a defensive call. The team that uses the most double teams in all of football are the Patriots. You can often tell a true double team by the alignment of the defensive backs. You know, you can see two defensive backs in the grill of a receiver, or the more common example is if a safety is heavily tilted towards a receiver before the snap and gets his eyes on the receiver post-snap. You know, the Patriots call it one double, you know, and they call it, and they call out the player's number. So it's one double, 82. One double, 87, whatever the case may be, a player's number. So keep that in mind, that what looks like, oh, threw it in double coverage, which, no, you didn't. He didn't throw it in double coverage. It's guys reacting to the throw. The other things, boy, that quarterback doesn't know how to look off defenders. Boy, that quarterback really does a good job looking off defenders. Not often what you think it is. Quarterbacks will stare down deep safeties or purposely look in a different direction in order to get them to move, because zone defenders will react to the quarterback's eyes. This is known as looking off. But the term is thrown around too loosely. Just because a quarterback looks elsewhere before eventually getting to his target doesn't mean he's looking off the defender. Just maybe going through his progressions. He's looking for the first read. It's covered, so he goes to the second. He's not looking off the defender. He's going through his progressive read. So if it's well-designed play concept, his progression should have a similar effect of a look-off. So the only way to really know is when you study tape and look at the All-22, and you can see, okay, that's a progression read. That's a look-off read. A look-off read is where you can go with the ball, but you're just trying to manipulate the defender. A progressive read is you're going through one progression to another, finding the best option. Route combination or design so that if one route is covered, another should open up. So understanding that, I think, is key. You know, somebody asked a question here, what's the tip on how to watch a game on TV, watching the game on TV? And it's a good question. And how we watch on TV is largely affected by the camera angles. Broadcasts tend to favor tight camera angles that are zoomed in wherever the ball's going. The problem is that there are 22 players on the field, and oftentimes we can't see the secondary and how the routes are developing downfield. Essentially, you're getting half the story because half the game is being hidden, especially in today's passing game. I would say that watching games on TV is more misleading than ever because of the inability to show all 22. You're missing half the game, which is why I always say, sure, watch games on TV, get a feel for things. But none of my work is done off TV tape. It's all done off of what we call intercut, which is basically watching the game from two different angles, from all 22, which is sideline wide, and then tight angle to evaluate the line play. So if you can't see the secondary, you can't see the routes developing, you're missing half the game. And that's becoming more and more important, again, in today's ever-increasing passing game. Now, you're starting to see some of the TV networks experimenting with the Skycam, but you don't see it's a lot of backlash from that. People just tend to kind of want to watch the guys and see it the way they see it because that's the way they're looking at it. I do think that we're going to maybe get to the point one day where you can choose what angle you want to watch, and I would suggest if you want to learn more about the game, take a look at the game from all 22 to see what's going on, and then to go and study the line play, go look at the tight line. So you can still watch the game, you know, and consume some things, but you miss a lot. A couple of things I would suggest that you can do. Before the snap on any play, find the grass, okay? A lot of people say to understand what's really going on, watch the defense or watch the linebackers, partially on the theory that you're going to naturally find the ball, which is perfectly fine, but the reality is it's kind of an odd way to watch an entire game for more than just a few plays. Before the snap, instead of watching the quarterback, look at the sideline, try to look at the defense and figure out where the grass is. Okay, are they packed in tight or are they way off the receiver? Chances are that whatever you see is the same thing that quarterbacks and offensive coordinators see. And you'll be amazed at how often the ball goes to that grass area, as well as how often good defenses show open grass, then close it up fast. Then once the ball is snapped, you can watch it as normal, though from a much informed view. You know, we'll get into more. We'll talk a little bit about personnel groupings and maybe how to watch a game from a quarterback standpoint next week. So we'll get into that. Want to get into a little bit. We're running a little long here. But I want to start this, and I'll pick it up next week. Let's take a look. It's a question about, you know, who's the best college program at developing players? And, you know, you can look at overall numbers. You look at who's been drafted. Let's break it down, shall we, by position. And let's break it down by since 2000, because we're now 2020, from 2000 to 2020, and then we'll break it down from 2010 to 2020. So let's take the skill positions today. We'll do quarterbacks, we'll take running backs, we'll take receivers, and then we'll get into tight end and offensive line next week, and we'll go work our way through. Quarterbacks, since 2010 to 2020, how many draft picks? Who's got the most draft picks? Think about it. Who's really done a good job with quarterbacks recently? We've had a lot of them drafted. That's right, the Oklahoma Sooners. Five of them. Alabama, remember when Alabama couldn't get a quarterback? They're just not. Three of them. Arkansas, three. Florida State, three. Iowa, three. LSU, three. NC State, three. Northwestern, three. Oklahoma State, three. Oregon State, three. And USC, three. Those are the number of quarterbacks taken by each of those schools since 2010. Since 2000, USC's had 8, LSU's had 8, Louisville's had 6, Georgia's had 6, Oklahoma's had 6, Oregon's had 6, Florida State's had 5, Michigan's had 5, Ohio State's had 5, Stanford's had 5. So what do you notice there? He had Alabama number 2 in the list since 2010, but didn't even make the list since 2000. Why? You see the change in philosophy at Alabama. So you can learn a lot from some of this. What about running backs? Since 2010, who's produced the most draft picks in college football? Well, it's Alabama at 10, LSU at 9, Miami 7, Auburn 6, Georgia 6, Florida 6, Oklahoma 6, Stanford 6, USC 6, Wisconsin 6. How about since 2000? Take it over 20 years. Who's had the most running backs drafted? Alabama, LSU were 1 and 2 since 2010. Who's 1 and 2 since 2000? Alabama's at 15, LSU's at 15. Looks pretty much the same. Next is USC with 13, Georgia with 12, Miami with 12, Auburn with 11, Ohio State with 11, Oklahoma with 10, Wisconsin with 10, Arkansas with 9, Florida State with 9. What about wide receivers? Since 2010, who has had the most draft picks since 2010? Clemson at 10. Georgia at 10. Well, surprising, Georgia ground and pound, 10 receivers. LSU with 10. I'll remember no offense and what they've had a few guys they put in the league. Ohio State with 10. Oklahoma with 8. USC with 8. Alabama with 7. Baylor with 7. Florida with 7. Miami with 7. Notre Dame with 7. How about since 2000, who's produced the most receivers in college football, in the NFL draft from college football? Ohio State with 20. LSU with 19. Florida with 18, USC with 16, Oklahoma with 15, Clemson with 14, Florida State with 14, Miami with 14, Georgia with 13, Michigan with 13, Texas A&M at 12. So let's kind of look at it. You know, what's DBU? And we're going to get into that. We'll take you through everybody. We're going to get through that in future episodes. But in short, quarterback U of recent years, Oklahoma. 10 years, Oklahoma. 20 years, USC. Running back U is Alabama. And then LSU's right behind, but Alabama's running back U produced the most in the last 10 years or last 20 years. Receivers for the last 20 years, wide receiver U is Ohio State. Last 10 years, Clemson is wide receiver U. So it's interesting. It's not always what you think, is it? It's a lot about marketing. It's a lot about, hey, this market this way. It's not the facts. Sometimes look at it a little differently. We'll get in some tight ends and offensive line, maybe even defensive line next week and two. We'll get into that. Hey, again, if you got a question, you got a comment, send it to me at contactchris over at LandryFootball.com, and we will get to it with you, and we will certainly address it right here. We appreciate you joining us. We thank you for your time. We want to tell you once again what we've got going on at LandryFootball.com. All the Power 5 schools roster breakdowns and roster analysis are done. We have the group of 5 that we're working through. We are working on the NFL. As well, we're going to get those roster breakdowns in the NFL. So, got a lot going on at LandryFootball.com. Also, check out our Twitch channel. We've got a lot of good programming there. You can find that out over at LandryFootball.com. So, check that out. Invest in a membership to LandryFootball.com to get behind the curtain look at the college and pro game. Less than $5 a month, $4.99 a month. If you take advantage of the scouting season offer, year membership. You're going to love it. You're going to absolutely love it. You can try it out for a month, 3 months, whatever. But that's the best offer that we have. So we think you will appreciate it, enjoy it, and it will increase your awareness and understanding of the game and certainly your enjoyment of the game. Folks, we are forging on with a season. We don't know what it's going to look like, when it's going to start, all the details, but we're getting you prepared for the season. We're getting excited about the season, and we'll just roll with the punches like everyone else and figure it out as we go like everyone else, because we focus on the things we can control, and that is players, teams, coaches, schemes at the college and NFL level, all the latest inside information, all the behind-the-scenes film room analysis from a college, an NFL coaching and scouting standpoint. We got it all for you at LandryFootball.com. And we certainly love talking football with you each and every Thursday on the Landry Football Podcast. Check us out at Landry Football. Send us a question and we'll address it. Hey, appreciate you joining us. Join us again next time on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at Landry Football. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.